The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, supplying the region for over 40 years.
So, a big day at Westminster last week. Will the message get through?
Oh, the message definitely got through. It was loud and clear. I mean, they need to come back with a response. We expect a response. If there's no response, farmers won't stop there.
We're looking ahead to this week's crop tech.
Putting the kind of tech into crop tech. A lot of them will have state-of-the-art technology on display, updates to things like farm management software, soil health scanning.
Reporting on some new kit from last week's Snowy Midlands Machinery Show at Newark Showground. And of course, we'll see what the crops and markets are doing. And Sean's here with some timely agronomy advice.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
Well, winter certainly arrived last week, didn't it? Plenty of snow through the week, and then Storm Bert took it all away, replacing it with warmth, wind and rain. Only in Britain. Hope you've had a good week. I'm Steve Orchard. In the news this week, we're looking at a big drop in the winter and spring barley planted area for next year and a really big drop in oilseed rape. AHDB say a reduction of 17%, taking it to the lowest UK area for 42 years. The long-awaited flooding relief payments will be on their way any day soon. Payments of up to £25,000 are being made at last to around 13,000 farmers affected by the severe wet weather from storms Henk and Babette between October last year and March. At last week's CLA Rural Business Conference, DEFRA Secretary Steve Reid pledged to make farming more profitable. He didn't say exactly how, announcing a roadmap to see what farming will look like in 25 years' time. I think we may need some action a little sooner, as do the tens of thousands who were in London on Tuesday. Lincolnshire farmer Andrew Ward, who was one of the organisers, he sent his thoughts at the end of a momentous day.
It's been an unbelievable few hours. We're not really sure how many people we've had. We had 15,000 people register, but we think there's been approaching 40,000 here. It might even be more than that. The whole of Whitehall was closed. The crowds stretched. Full width of both lines of Whitehall, from Horse Guards Parade to nearly Westminster. Huge area. We've had a lot of people talk. We've had Jeremy Clarksonear talking about the viability of farming. We've had some tenant farmers talking. And the whole of this event was organised by five farmers. I was one of the five. And just an unbelievable experience to be part of this. The problem we've got is that the government don't realise or don't value food production and think that everything they've done with the budget won't have an impact on the countryside food farming. But it's not just that, it's also about the viability of future farms, family businesses carrying on. So this is not the end of what we're doing, this is the start of the beginning. Rachel Reeves has said that she'll not back down. She said that the government will carry on their stance. They have to fill this £22 billion black hole. However, we're saying that their figures are wrong and they need to look at the top of the food chain, i.e. the supermarkets, not the bottom. But it's not just about inheritance tax, capital gains tax or any of them. It's about the future of food production in this country. The government has said they're not going to back down. Well, we won't either. Farmers are a very resilient bunch. We're used to dealing with pressure. We're used to operating under extreme conditions. It's in our blood. So this will carry on until we get some action, until we get to talk to the government, and until they realise the errors of their ways, because the figures they are using are wrong.
Thanks, Andrew. And at the Midlands Machinery Show at Newark Showground the following day, I caught up with NFU Deputy President David Exwood.
We delivered a message to government and it was brilliant. It was clear, it was peaceful, it was united. It was something to be really proud of. I think the NFU and the industry showed its best side. Really pleased with it. The ball is now in the government's court.
Well, that was going to be my question. Do you think the message will get through and do you think any notice will be taken of yesterday?
Oh, the message definitely got through. It was loud and clear. I mean, look, the media coverage yesterday was epic and it's there. Look, they need to come back with a response. We expect a response. If there's no response, farmers won't stop there.
Now, I don't normally do personal comment on the programme. I'm a broadcaster, not a farmer. But I can see that if things don't change in the government's attitude to farmers, food production and the rural economy, some serious trouble's brewing for the UK. quality, sustainable, cheap food production, food security, excessive imports, and the potential loss of many jobs and long-term family businesses all hang on the next few months of action or inaction by the government. I hope they listen, get round the table with representatives of agriculture, accept that things need to change, and actually take action. The Farming Programme fully supports the stance that farmers are taking and will continue to promote the action you're taking. More power to you. OK, we'll hear about some new kit on show at the Midlands Machinery Show shortly. But first, it's Crop Tech this week at Stoneleigh. What's on? Here's Alice Dyer.
We've got over 100 exhibitors coming to the show this year. A real wide range, as always. So putting the kind of tech into Crop Tech. A lot of them will have state-of-the-art technology on display, updates to things like farm management software, soil health scanning, and then, of course, you know, all the old favourites, all the, you know, agronomy companies offer advice on things like crop nutrition, entering or managing sustainable farming incentive. So, yeah, just a real kind of wide range of exhibitors, and we like to think we've got something for everyone and every arable setup.
As ever with CropTech and a lot of the other shows, there's things like seminars and speakers and learning opportunities, aren't there?
This year, there are three conference theatres, Innovation, Knowledge and Profit. So in the Innovation Theatre, visitors can hear from quite well-known farmers. So you've got your Andrew Wards, you've got Ed Horton, to name a few, and just kind of hear their experiences of how they're driving their businesses forward and coping with the myriad of challenges that arable farmers have to cope with. And in that theatre, we've also got a session on gene editing, hearing how gene edited crop trials are going, and also hearing from DEFRA on how the new policy is being rolled out. Then in the Knowledge Theatre, you can hear more about developments in things like crop protection and soil health. And finally, and potentially probably the most important this year, is the Profit Theatre. So visitors can hear all about sustainable farming incentive, and then very relevant at the moment following inheritance tax announcements on financial planning. So yeah, something for everyone, I think, whether it's kind of practical agronomy advice you want or future-proofing your farm business.
Yeah, so we talked about things like the changes to inheritance tax and the budget and so on the programme, but it'd be good to actually hear from somebody speaking about this and be able to ask questions.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing, isn't it? Everyone's situation is so unique. It's nice to be able to have that interaction with the speakers.
There's a social element to this as well, isn't there? As with all these shows.
Yeah, exactly that. I think, you know, it's been another quite tough start to the season for a lot of farmers. Obviously, there's a lot going on politically, which probably is bringing the mood down quite a lot. So I think just getting off the farm for a day, having chats with people going through the same thing, sitting in a seminar hall with a hot coffee and just hearing some of the positive things going on, or, you know, solutions to the same problems that maybe you're facing, can really do some good in a way.
Absolutely. So where is it? When is it? Where do we go for tickets and information?
So this year, it's second year, it'll be at the National Agricultural Exhibition Centre at Stoneleigh in Warwickshire. It's free to attend, free to park. It's Wednesday the 27th of November and Thursday the 28th of November. Open 9:30 till 4:30. So go to croptech.com and you can just register for your free ticket on there.
Alice, thanks for all the information. Thanks for joining us on the Farming Programme.
Excellent. Thanks for having me.
See you there on Wednesday. To the fields now with a look at the crops and some important advice. Our crop doctor, Sean Sparling. Morning, Sean.
Yes, good morning, Steve. Shorter and sweeter this week as promised. So winter draws on then, as they say. Half an inch of rain over the weekend into Monday, then an inch or so of snow for us. First snow of the season to wake us up on Tuesday morning. Didn't cause any problems really, other than scuppering a few last-ditch drilling plans, turning things a bit too sticky for that job. The snow hung around for most of Tuesday, then with more of the wet stuff taking that away and through the end of this week, keeping things a little too wet to drill really anything other than the sand and the brushy stuff. But the notable change this week has been the way the temperatures suddenly look a bit more like winter for the first time in a couple of years. proper frosty this week. Minus twos to minus fours every night this week. The first real decent frost we've seen since the one we took, the minus one on the 12th of October. And with day temperatures now struggling to get above three, despite lovely sunny days like Thursday, we find ourselves back to the wet stuff again. And after this last few days, it's dropped another inch or so onto the county. And as these soil temperatures start to fall away quickly now, growth really starting to slow to a tick over already. The minus two, minus three, minus four, that's cold enough to knock out some of these BYDV vector aphids like grain aphids, rose grain aphids, bird cherry oat aphids too. So I think that job has become far less of a concern as the winter does the job that the pyrethroids may only have done half a job off anyway. The little spiders will quite happily exist down to minus six, though they're still munching away. Also, soil temperatures have dropped away dramatically this week, as I say. If you remember last Sunday, we were talking about soil still in double figures. As of this morning, I'm doing well to find anything above 5 degrees at 10 centimetres. That's not going to encourage rapid growth, with plants beginning to think about shutting down towards stasis as we head towards the end of the month. Slugs still nibbling away, as I say, in places, so keep your eyes peeled and your traps out. But as far as it goes, I think it's been a pretty successful autumn. Everything that was planned to go in the ground has gone in, and in pretty well, mostly anyway. There are a few dodgy bits. Few too many fields, I think, went into blackgrass land way too early at the end of September, early October. But the synmethylene-based pre-em stacks have done a very good job so far anyway of holding on to that blackgrass. Noticeable in some of the really bad blackgrass sites that were drilled before the main flush of blackgrass had appeared at the end of September, early October. These are the fields where, despite robust synmethylene-based pre-em stacks, we are now starting to see blackgrass plants emerging. Now, there are still people topping up the residuals, but you have to question the logic of applying more flufenacet onto emerged blackgrass that has already shrugged off a full dose of flufenacet pre-em. Because if it didn't do it pre-em, it sure as damn it isn't going to do it post-em. So do speak to your advisor about this and manage your expectations if you're going to go. If you haven't controlled blackgrass within about 5 days of drilling, the chances are you're stuck with that now. Very few reliable treatments once blackgrass is through the ground. And it just illustrates the importance of doing all you can to control your blackgrass culturally, stale seed beds, delaying the drill, etc., before the seed goes in the ground. I'm not criticising anybody. I fully understand the rush to get drilled up after what happened last autumn. But every action has an equal and opposite reaction and all that. All I'm saying is that the bad blackgrass fields that were drilled after a decent flush had been dealt with glyphosate are still spotless, but there are plenty of the other ones that aren't. That's all I'm saying. Cold enough and wet enough now for propizamide in oilseed rape. Soil temperature needs to be 10 degrees and falling at 30 centimetres and 8 degrees and falling at 10 centimetres. Well, they're close to 5 now at 10 centimetres, thanks to this last week. Much more insulated, of course, down to 30, but even down there, happily sitting at 10 degrees and below. Soils also need to be at 80% field capacity. So after the wetter this week, conditions, I think, pretty much perfect. Just watch the weather, though, from a stewardship perspective. Don't apply propizamide if heavy rain is forecast to fall or if it has fallen within 48 hours of your proposed application, nor do you want to be going really if the land drains are running in these fields. You've got until the end of January to do it, but we need to manage these products and do all we possibly can to minimise the risk of propizamide getting into watercourses. That is how we're going to keep that product, and that is how we should be managing it. And remember that if you're applying propizamide on its own, then you can apply that onto a frosted leaf or a soaking wet leaf and it will still do its job. If you're including herbicide, fungicide, trace element, then you need a dry or at least a drying leaf. And don't mix any triazole fungicide that has growth regulatory effects with Arylex products like Belcar if you're putting that in with your propizamide. You know, so difenoconazole, metconazole, tebuconazole all have growth regulatory effect. Prothioconazole is the only fungicide which doesn't, and you can cause significant crop effects in oilseed rape if you mix any form of growth regulator with Belcar, so just be aware of that if you're using it. Questionable with soil temperatures falling as rapidly as they are and with growth slowing as quickly as it is, as to how much good you're doing with a fungicide or trace element if the crop isn't capable of taking it in and assimilating it as these soil temperatures plummet and it closes down over the coming weeks and months. There is very little point in spending your money on expensive fungicide and bespoke trace element mixes in with the propizamide if the weather coming cold is going to do that for free and stop things getting any worse anyway. So do just think about that and speak to your advisor about whether you're wasting your money. That's about it for this week. Wet old, cold old, wintry old lot, but then it is that time of year and we're in blooming good form despite all that. So let's see what the next 7 days bring.
Thanks as ever, Sean. In a moment, we'll see how the livestock and grain markets have fared this week, what the weather holds in store as we head towards December, and hear about a couple of new bits of kit. Next.
The Farming Programme with Arrowquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. For all your steel needs, call their friendly experts.
The Week in Agriculture. This is The Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
Last week, the Midlands Machinery Show took place at a very snowy Newark showground. I've just about thawed out. I had a chat with a couple of the exhibitors with new kit to show. First, Valtra with their new Series S tractor on the Chandler stand. Area sales manager Gavin Towers.
We launched it September last year. It took a while to get them through. It's now being totally produced in Finland, but previously it was produced in one of our sister factories. It goes up to 420 horsepower, so the bigger horsepower sector. Brand new tractor. Great to the market. We're very excited about where it's going to go.
What kind of sector is this aiming at then?
This is our high horsepower sector, so 400 horsepower.
Okay, and what's new about it?
The newest thing about it is the fact it's a completely new design, but it's actually made in the Finland factory because we couldn't do it before because of the paint shop restrictions. We've now invested millions of pounds in a new paint shop so we can paint the chassis of this tractor in the factory so we can build it ourselves, which makes everything that we make finish now rather than coming from our sister factories.
Okay, and what does it do? What's underneath there that makes it interesting?
Underneath there is the AGCO power engine, 8.4 litre, and the AGCO variable transmission, which our sister brands use. So that's what makes it new to us.
Okay, and in the cab, anything new there?
The cab is similar to all the other models. We keep the consistency from the four cylinders right through to this one with the layout in the cab, so they're all the same. So if you're getting one, it's the same as the others.
Okay, and this is available now?
Yes, it's available for sale now. If anybody wants a demonstration, speak to the local dealer.
And Missouri had a new mower and hedge cutter on display. Starting with the 57 series hedge cutter, here's sales manager Josh Allen.
Now the 57 series is a fixed 5.7 metre arm. We're using a Tensegrity style hitch. So what that means is the hitch works on a standard three-point linkage, but actually is fixed in four corners utilising a chain and a top link mechanism, making it a lot easier to put on and off, and also locking it off to the ability that potentially axle brackets, something like that would, without having the faff of locking that to one tractor. Very nice and easy to put on. Nice, simple, strong machine throughout. Simple to utilise, simple to get to change the filters and just general working elements like that. If you come around the back here, I'll show you. We've got obviously a parallel linkage throughout the whole machine. Nice, like I said, fixed arm onto a 1 or 2.5 metre head. We've utilised in the head with the bearings, so the bearing housing can be adjusted, making it a lot easier to change and assemble the bearings inside the head, stopping the likes of having to preload bearings or have any problems that way for the end user. We've basically built this with end user in mind, being able to keep a nice strong machine that's going to have very little downtime in the very narrow season they're given now.
And does this require a specific tractor to link it up to?
Tractor requirements on the whole, as long as you've got three-point linkage and tractor weight being around the sort of three-ton marker, you tend to be fairly good on anything above 80, 90 horsepower. So, having that nice locking-off system will take any slop out or any worry of smaller tractors being turned over there.
And what sort of cost are we talking about for this?
The starting price of this is about £23,500. And then you can build it up accordingly from there, so whatever best suits.
Okay, so that's the 57 hedge cutter. Over here, we have another shiny new green machine. What's this one?
So this is our new Razorback blade. So it's working on the principles of a batwing topper. Where we've changed this going forward, and it's very unique to us, is we've gone semi-mounted, sort of alleviating any chance of tie bars or any unnecessary components on top of the deck. So it makes the deck a lot easier to clean. But also, by semi-mounting it, it takes away any problems regarding link arms and PTO shafts. So there's no chance of you damaging your PTO shaft there. We're running full-spec Bondioli SFT shafts on this. So they're 250-hour greasing. They've got a nylon coating on the internal tube there, which takes away any friction. The life in the shafts, everything there, is going to be a lot longer, so it's not going to cost you a lot to run. A lot of people think we're crazy, but we've gone back to a two-blade system over a three or six. Now, the reasoning behind this, it's, again, ownership costs. We're getting the same cut, the same finish that everyone is with a six-blade, utilising it in a two. We've gone wider with the blade carrier to basically be able to run that on a much smaller horsepower tractor, so it doesn't take a lot to run it up. The centrifugal force then will keep it running nicely. The skirts on this are lovely and deep, so it maintains all of that cut to give you a much better mulch. It's just a much stronger, nicer machine than basically what we've been used to seeing.
And again, horsepower from the tractor?
Horsepower from the tractor is always regarding on what you're going into. I'd say really a minimum of about 80 to 90 horsepower on this would be fine.
Okay, and what kind of cost are we looking at for this?
Again, we start at about 23,500 for this. That will give you a solid machine to start running with. That's a six-wheeled machine. And that's delivered and installed on farm.
Okay, these are all available now. And where would somebody go if they wanted to know more?
Regarding delivery, now a lot of the order book is filling up. We're looking quite full into spring. So if it's something they're needing very quickly, please get in touch and we can try and sort out getting it there fast. Website would probably be the easiest. So that's www.missouriuk.com. Or call the office on 01905 841 123.
All right, Josh, thank you.
Perfect, Steve. Take care of yourself. Lovely to meet you.
Midlands Machinery Show is back just one day from next year on the 19th of November at Newark Showground.
The Farming Programme.
Market reports.
Starting with livestock from Louth Market. Good morning, auctioneer Edward Middleton.
Good morning, Steve. Starting off with the prime cattle, a very, very fast trader this week in the prime cattle, with the steers all in average 297.87 pence per kilo and prime heifers averaging 304.15 pence per kilo. Top price in the pence per kilo in the steers went to JNS Brooks of Strubby at 304.5 pence per kilo, and in the pounds per head were GB Howsham of Stickford at £1,947.38. In the heifers, both the pence per kilo and the pounds per head went to F. Wallace & Son of Biscothorpe at 319.5 pence per kilo, or £1,964.93. On to the store cattle, steers all in averaging £1,073.57, and heifers all in averaging £822.92. Stronger demand for the stronger native bred cattle, with a run from Wilkinson Brothers of Sudbrook, which topped at £1,290 for a pen of 24-month-old Hereford Cross steers. A marvellous run of suckle calves from D. Shamley of Tetney, which topped at £1,205 for an 8-month-old Limousin steer. Heifers from the same home topped at £1,065. Onto the sheep, a very, very, very fast trade in the lambs this week with an SQQ of 311.27 pence per kilo and an all-in average pounds per head with a fantastic £140.27. Top price in the lambs went to P.S. Marsden and Son of Lincoln with a super pen of 57 kilo Texel lambs, topping at 182. Onto the store lambs, an average of £99.17. Top price was £130 for a super pen of blue Texel side lambs from J.S. and D. Bingham of Gainsborough. Finally, onto the cull ewes, a real mixture with every breed pretty much represented, which obviously is reflected in the average. We have an average this week of £89.70. R.J. Bett of Louth topped the ewes at £177. Mules topped at £110 and grazers anywhere between £60 to £80. I'm Edward Middleton, auctioneer at Louth Livestock Market.
Thanks, Edward. To the grain markets now with Openfield's Alice Killam. Morning, Alice.
Good morning, Steve. A busy week for all farmers with the London March on Tuesday and the commencement of the winter trade shows with the Midlands Machinery Show. The market hasn't paused for us, however, with some more slow and steady progress this week. We have seen over the past couple of weeks that Donald Trump's election victory has buoyed the US dollar, causing headwinds for US wheat and maize prices. Despite this, US prices have risen from recent lows as funds reduce their short positions. Funds have flipped what was a near-record short position on US maize futures and are now long, which coincides with consecutive weeks of massive export sales. There are concerns that Trump's policies could be inflationary, halting the US Federal Reserve's interest rate reductions, whilst Trump tariffs could increase consumer prices. Let's hope Elon Musk can be a positive influence. Tensions escalated in the Black Sea region as the US and UK gave Ukraine permission to deploy long-range missiles against targets deep inside of Russia. Inevitably, Russia saw this as direct involvement by NATO into the conflict. Dark days indeed. The truth is that we don't know what's going to happen yet, but we do know what happened the last time this conflict escalated, and none of us know what news we might wake up to tomorrow morning. Ukrainian and Russian export pace is expected to tail off significantly in the second half of the season, to be replaced by Argentinian and Australian supplies. Opinions vary as to the size of the Australian crop, which ranges from 29 to 34 million metric tons. Although there is no war premium in any of today's values whatsoever, and we could never rule anything out, it's equally true that a sound selling strategy can't really be based on what might happen in the coming months in Russia. The reality globally is that the US values have been priced in to grab as much export business as possible, and these have dropped lower in the last fortnight because of the strong dollar. And Black Sea values are being dominated by the speed of exports coming from both Russia and Ukraine. It's going to take quite something to change the story of the global market. A quick word on oilseed rape, which is sadly becoming a marginal crop in the UK. Price-wise, those with skin in the game will have been watching the bull run that we've been on for the last month. Unfortunately, Thursday was not a good day. We saw a drop of 20 euros late on in the day. We will be looking for a bounce on this early next week. All eyes on the news headlines then in the coming days. It is these stories that are most likely to move the needle for us. If we see an opportunity, we'll want to grab it with both hands. Some guide prices for this week, circa Friday morning. Feed wheat, December, 180 to 190. February, 185 to 195. May, 190 to 200. Feed barley, December, 145 to 155. February, 150 to 160. May, 155 to 165. I will leave the oilseed rape prices blank for this week, as at the time of writing, this market has closed heavily down. It will take some establishing where things lie next week. Feed beans, February 215 to 220 and May 220 to 230. As usual, please call for firm values.
Thanks, Alice.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
Low pressure, so unsettled weather for the first half of the week. Strong southwesterly winds gusting up to mid-40s mph, turning more northerly later in the week. Plenty of rain, particularly midweek. Temperatures in single figures after today, turning colder by the end of the week. Next week, I'm reporting from CropTech and the CLA's Ag Transition Workshop, plus the rest of the week in agriculture. Sunday morning from 7, or anytime online, podcast, smart speaker, or search Farming on the Rayo app. I'm Steve Orchard. Until then, have a great week.
The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, BSI ISO 9001 accredited.